Jam! Hello again and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. I am Chewy, and I am not the father.
So as you can tell, Clues is in that special place where he laughs at everything.
Oh boy, yeah. We'll see if he is after the break.
No, this was after the break. I am not the father. And this is where I get up and
also
do a little
not
dance.
The mama.
That is true. Not the mama. Not the mama. Not the mama.
That's so, your parents at this point.
Clues is the giggling idiot.
And I'm also not the father.
And Squee is the only sane one left.
My lawyers advised me not to comment on parentage.
Fair enough. So... Hello again. This is Monday Night Magic number 614, which is not a small number.
I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say from here on out, our episode numbers will not be a small number ever.
I mean, probably.
We might eventually get to the max amount that the RAM on the internet can handle, and then we just repeat the same number. Or we roll over and start over.
Yeah, then we'll do Tuesday Night Magic number one.
Which will be even more confusing, because by that point it'll actually be like Tuesday Night Magic number 87.
Probably more than that. So, this was the pre-release weekend for Corset 2019. Bill, how'd you do?
I was asleep.
Clues, how'd you do?
I missed it.
Chewy, how'd you do? I didn't go either. So, that was your...
Don't get me wrong, I wanted to, but until late Saturday, I wasn't even in the country.
Correct. Because you were skydiving in Bel Air.
Sorry. Because I was scuba diving in Bon Air. That's right. What's funny is there, just down the street from where we were staying, there was a condo place called Bel Air. And every time we drove by it all week, I thought to myself, hey, I'm skydiving there, according to Chewy.
Now, this is a story all about... Anyway...
My life did get flipped, turned upside down.
It did, yeah. This might be the last time we hear from Clues in case a federal agent comes to his house and takes him away.
For more information on that, check out the odds and ends for this episode.
Yay.
You'll never guess where he found it.
This is accurate. So, let's go. Now, this is a little weird because there was a GP this weekend, even though it's pre-release weekend.
Yep.
And the only thing we can think of is because it was in Brazil, where they routinely can't get a freaking pre-release on time.
They tend to have issues getting the product distributed appropriately, if I recall correctly. Like, getting the actual product prevents it from happening on time.
Yeah, customs, I think, is the problem.
Yeah. And so, rather than having another, well, we can't do anything this weekend. Apparently they decided to have a GP, and that makes sense to me because it was well attended.
Yeah. Now, mind you, we don't know that for sure.
Yeah. This is conjecture.
This is just our assumptions because
yeah, if you actually know the thought process behind this, I would be curious to hear it.
Yeah. If they've said somewhere, point us at it. But for as long as I can remember, there are no other tournaments on pre-release weekend. So. Neat. But yeah, there were 1,429 people at GP Sao Paulo, which is the largest South American GP ever. Damn.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
They made a good use of their weekend.
Is this really the largest?
That's what it said in the coverage.
Nice. It's just weird that that's not like the top thing mentioned in the top stories. In fact,
I think it's because it's in the actual first page of it.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, the first thing in the top stories is the metagame breakdown. Like, oh.
Yeah, the very first sentence on the day 2 coverage announces that it's the largest tournament South America has ever seen.
Nice. Well, there you go, then. And
they played modern.
We are going to horribly screw up the pronunciations on this, so I apologize.
Like, and how?
Probably worse than usual. But yes, it was modern, and the winner was Jose Luis Echeverria. I know that's not right, but I'm not sure how you say it properly. Who's playing Mardu Pyromancer.
Oh, do you see who's in this deck? You see it there?
Bedlam Reveler, yeah.
Isn't you that mean neat? Young Peasy, look at him there. All four copies. Love it.
Also, Bedlam Reveler.
Also Blood Moon, because take that, you have mountains.
In second place...
Mountains for everyone! I'm sorry.
All right. In second place, Leonardo Gucci, I think, is running the Abzan Traverse deck.
Siege Rhinos for everyone.
Pretty much.
I remember that standard.
Such great hits as Tarmogoyf, Siege Rhino, Lingering Souls. Wow.
Skooz!
Yeah, sure. That too.
Oh, Skooz is cool, man. Look at the Skooz.
Look at him. In third place, I think. I didn't check to make sure these were...
Actually, the art for Skooz is really disturbing if you look at it closely. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, it is, actually.
They're in the correct order if it saves you time.
Good. In third place, Sebastian Pazzo is running the Kirk Clan Ironworks deck. This is... is this usually an infinite loop? I haven't looked at Modern in a few weeks now. Like, it's got the Scrap Trawler and Mirror Retriever... to go with Kirk Clan Ironworks to get infinite mana for presumably Pyrite Spellbomb destruction?
Presumably, yeah.
Wow, you remember the old days when you had infinite mana, you just point a fireball at your opponent's face?
Those were the days.
I guess it's too easy for that to get stopped somehow.
You really don't want to lose to a blue spell, right, Clues?
You never want to lose to a blue spell.
Yeah.
So therefore, Blood Moon, mountains for everyone.
If they counter your Pyrite Spellbomb, you just shrug and get it back and do it again. I'm feeling all right. In fourth place, Thiago Casasanta. There we go. Casasanta, yeah, is running Tron.
I loved Tron.
Not that one. This is green Tron, not red or blue Tron. But look, this is actually running Karn the Death Star and the Ugin. Ooh.
The Ugin.
In fifth place, we have Vinicius Karam, let's say, running Affinity, which is actually not. It's Decepticons, but, you know.
No. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's not a one. It's also running New Karn. So that's pretty good. In sixth place, Daniel... I actually have no idea how to pronounce his name.
I'm going to get it wrong for you. How about that? Kaizetta.
Kaizetta?
That's what I would go with.
I'm sure it's wrong, but it's the best I have.
Something like that is actually running Amulet Titan. You remember when they got rid of Summer Bloom and this deck was going to die?
Yeah.
Huh.
I recall them saying, we're going to get rid of Summer Bloom rather than the other pieces so that the deck has a chance and that's going right. And then it did.
Yeah, here it is in the top eight.
Yeah. Back in my day, we got rid of Sensei's Divining Top to get rid of Miracles and Legacy.
Yeah, it had much the same effect.
Both had the same goal of keeping the decks around.
Yeah, I was going to say punch it in the win rate instead of... abolishing it completely. So, hey,
yeah, these are not kidney shots. Right.
We should get rid of miracle as a keyword or an ability or a trigger or anything. Get rid of it all. The word miracle, strike it.
In seventh place, Breno Magalhaes. I've heard this guy's name pronounced too. Magalhaes? Magalhaes? Something like that. Is running a red green Eldrazi deck.
Skooz.
Wait. Thank you, Clues.
You're welcome. I didn't know if you noticed him there, but it's still disturbing artwork.
I had not, but...
Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah, and Bloodbraid Elf, instead of being a focused combo piece, Bloodbraid Elf is there for pure value because you can play off of your Bloodbraid Elf Dismember, Lightning Bolt, Ancient Stirrings, Scavenging Ooze, Matter Reshaper, Eldrazi Obligator, Noble Hierarch, Boreal Druid. It's just... pay four mana, get this and another thing.
Have two cards.
Yeah.
One of which is a 3/2 with haste. So, go for it.
The other of which is totally something you want. So
the other which is dealer's choice.
Also, with Eldrazi Obligator, you can still pay the extra cost off of the Cascade because you're casting it. So, even better.
Yeah. That's a lot of haste.
Isn't it?
Just imagine the misery. like, okay, Blood Red Elf into Obligator, and you know what? Give me that, and it has haste too, and now I'm swinging with three creatures.
Take something like nine.
You don't have a blocker. That was fun.
And then rounding out the top eight, Fernando Gonzalez is running another Mardu Pyromancer.
Hey, Young Peasy's back.
Bedlam Reveler. So there you go. There is your modern top eight. We've got seven different archetypes.
Yep.
So if we jump over to the... So let's see, this is... Okay, yeah, this is day one and day two, which is really obnoxious. It's because it's sorted by the day one percentage. But day one, Mardu Pyromancer was just under 9% of the field. And the much maligned Tron was 8.5% of the field. Whereas on day two, what's got the highest... Others was 10.7%. Huh. Okay, hang on. It looks like Tron made the most day two with just under 8% of the field for day two. So,
was Tron really much maligned?
Yeah, dude. Everyone wants to hate on Tron these days.
But it was such a good film.
No, the clues. That joke wasn't funny the first time.
It was way funnier the second time because nobody saw it coming except everyone.
I blame the Master Control Program.
I just loved the bit, okay? The bit with the bit in Tron was hilarious. It got funnier later on when I really understood it well, and I don't know. Really enjoyed the bit.
Isn't Clues adorable? So...
Nope.
I beg to differ. But yeah, just look at this massive pile of archetypes.
Where are you finding this archetype breakdown? Because I can't find it.
In the top stories.
I was trying to stall with my joke.
It's the very first thing in top stories, which I said like an hour ago. That might have been when you had stepped away for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone rang. I had to take it.
Yeah, they make a note on the main coverage page that there were seven different archetypes in the top eight and at least another four on top of that in the top 16. So having 11 different decks in the top 16 sounds pretty great.
Yeah. And like I said, anything that had more than a 1% stake in the metagame is listed here. And the list is just ridiculous. It just goes on and on forever.
Wow.
And then others is still 12.4% of the field on day one. Like, and remember the size of this event. So it's not like this is like a 200-person event, which means there's 12 people playing others. No. Like, this is insane. And people are still complaining about Modern. Maybe because I don't play Modern, I don't understand. Or maybe they just hate it because they can't laser focus their sideboard or something.
Like, are people actually complaining about Modern at this point?
People complain about everything.
Yeah, I know, but, like, you're calling attention to it. Like,
yeah, I see people bitching about Modern and most specifically Tron on Twitter all the time.
Okay.
And I think they just suck. I don't know. Like, it's not just randos. These are, like, well-known people that complain about Modern, and I don't understand. I really don't.
I don't get it, then. I mean, maybe it falls into that thing where people complain about it while they have it, but at the end of the day, they really just want there to be three decks so that they don't actually have to play test against everything.
I think that might be part of the complaints. I know in... So, to take a sidestep into Hearthstone, right now, the Hearthstone metagame is pretty wide open, right? Like, you can play all kinds of stuff. And I've heard one notable player, specifically Firebat, complain about this because it's too hard to build decks for tournaments because you can run into anything. He prefers, you know, there to be like five or six decks that you have to worry about and that's it, as opposed to anything can be played, essentially. And I'm wondering if that's not a similar thing. Like, Modern is so wide open right now that maybe it's too wide open for their tastes because they can't prepare properly. I don't know.
That's sort of where you run into the thing where something, a really healthy format in the eyes of most people is one where you don't have a dominant deck. But in the eyes of deck builders, I think the ideal format, like the ones who are really trying to like build a met, like within a meta game and try to get maximum chance of winning a given weekend, I think they just want ABC formats where there's deck A is the popular one, deck B beats deck A, and deck C beats deck B and has a good enough game against deck A that the best players can handle that too. And they don't really want to have that wide range of things to test against and feel like so much of it is out of their hands. Because when you have, you know, 15 archetypes and you've got a good gaming at 60% of them, the actual math is going to weigh a little bit heavier than your play strength.
Yeah.
But on the same note, as someone who's not playing, I much prefer this. Like, I think this is probably a more interesting format because it means that if I came up with a crazy interesting deck, I could actually play it and not feel like I'm just being an idiot. I mean, if I were playing in Modern with a deck that I made, I'd be an idiot for different reasons, but it's not specifically, you know, a bad idea to go rogue in this kind of format.
Yeah, exactly. And also, apparently, you're supposed to hate Tron. That's just what happens. But whatever. Enough randomly talking about things that we...
don't actually know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair.
Then is the show over?
No, not at all.
That's pretty much all we do is...
What? No. The modern metagame, we just don't understand the intricacies of. All this other stuff we got. So, new set is about to come out, which means we have lots of stuff. The normal comp rules change and...
the bookkeeping.
Oracle changes and the MTR updates seem to happen every time there's a new set. So, there's a lot. So, let's go through the important stuff. In the comp rules change, the two main things that I took away from it that actually matter to most players, well, not most players, that actually matter, are regarding token ownership. It says now the owner of a token is the person who created it, which used to be how it was a long time ago. But at some point it got changed to the owner of the token is the person who got it first. So, like, the classic example is the hunted creatures from Ravnica. The hunted creatures are way overstated for their cost, but they give your opponent some creatures. Like, the hunted dragon is a flying creature that gives your opponent some 2/2 knights. And so before, in the way, way back, you were the owner of all four of those. So for something that said, you know, for each thing you own... or whatever. There was something that shuffled cards into your library and then you revealed cards from the top for each one that you owned? Or something
that? There's plenty of effects that do that. They're generally the higher rarities that don't ever see competitive play, so don't think about them, but they do exist.
So yeah, it's a corner case, but this stood out to me because it used to be that whoever controlled the effect that made the token was the owner. And then they changed it to, well, that's confusing and silly. So now whoever got it first, whoever control the token entered the battlefield under, that's who owned it. And we were like, okay, that makes more sense. And now they're changing it back to the owner of the token is whoever created it. And I'm like, but we changed this before. What? Okay. So now whoever created it owns it. So he who smelt it, dealt it, essentially. So there you go.
I don't know why they're changing it back.
I don't either, but what does he say? We've considered changing the rule ever since token creation was retemplated to use the create technology. I'm pretty sure that it was changed at some point, right?
It was, yeah, because I remember, like, we talked about it.
Okay.
Either we talked about it here or we talked about it when we were on, like, when I was visiting a Mandipool episode, but I remember talking about this in podcast form, so there's evidence of it out there somewhere.
Yeah. So there you go. And the other comp rules change is the Squee Ixalan's binding thing.
The fiasco.
Yeah, so this is where that goes into effect.
Yeah.
So now, essentially, all you need to know is... the rules don't automatically avoid the can't cast thing. Because before, you put Squee behind an Ixalan's binding, and then to cast him, you would move him to the stack, so he's no longer under the Ixalan's binding, getting around it, which was not only a flavor fail, but a rules stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So they fixed it, so now if Squee is under an Ixalan's binding, he can't get out. And for all of, we've said this on a previous episode, for all of you saying that's the flavor fail, you are incorrect.
Yes. Squee's entire deal was being captured for a long time. Like, Squee is quite bindable.
Yeah.
Squee just won't die and stay dead.
Exactly. And this is coming from the man goblin, whatever, himself, so.
I actually just appreciate the fact that at the end of time, when all of the planes have collapsed upon themselves, it's going to be like Squee and like Imrakul. And like Imrakul's going to finally break out of that stupid moon and go, I am free now. And Squee's going to be like, sup, could you let me out?
And Nicol Bolas will still be trying to get all of his power back.
I mean, probably.
Oh, well. So
I wonder how Nicol Bolas feels about his Comic-Con preview thing not selling out immediately. Embarrassing to all the rest of them.
I don't know. I bet this next batch does, but we're not there yet.
No, we're not.
That's and comprehensive rules. I read through all of the rest of this of comprehensive rules, and there's really nothing else that stood out to me as important.
Yeah, a lot of it's just, like, neat little things that they have to do. Like, hey, look, there's new planeswalker types. Hey, look, eggs are a thing again, as in the type. Hey, look, we changed have to something else. Slight wording things that don't matter.
Yeah, so if there's everything something else the in here, then, you know, let us know if there's something that desperately matters. I don't think there is. Like I said, I read all this crap and went, huh. But then in the Oracle changes, there are a few things that are actually functional. The creature types have been updated. Eggs are now back, or are now a thing. Yeah, they're back. They were a thing before.
Yeah.
So now Rook Egg, Rock Egg, Dragon Egg, Ludovic's Test Subject, and Summoner's Egg are all eggs. So that makes sense.
Changelings are confused again.
Naturally. Pangolins are back. We mentioned that before. And also Trilobites are back. Trilobite? Trilobite.
Trilobite.
Okay. So yeah, there are two, apparently. Shorekeeper and Electrite. So,
nice.
There you go. And then the final functional change is only functional in corner cases, but is still a change. It's about...
Really corner.
Yeah, it's about cloning other cops. So it really comes down to, like, Quicksilver Gargantuan. The Quicksilver Gargantuan says, hey, it's a clone of that, except it's a 7-7. But if you were to then clone a Quicksilver Gargantuan, it's a copy of whatever that is, but it's a 7-7. But the original clone would go, so it's not a 7-7, it's the original card. And it's just dumb. So now they've made that so that it works, so that that new copy is a 7-7 as well. Got it? Again,
the cards do what you thought they did.
Yeah, the cards do the thing that makes some sense as far as cloning rules go.
Yeah, so there's this line, quote, this change is a functional change, but only in edge cases that you'll probably never encounter. So what this means for most of you is you'll actually never encounter it. And what this means for a tiny slice of you is all of your other judge friends are going to be asking you about this. So, sorry?
Yeah, and if you have that commander player who builds the clone deck, he's going to have a field day with his crap. Because he runs into these corner cases all the time.
Like, I have a Lizov commander deck, and I've never run into these cases. Like, the cards really just do what you always thought they did. You have to go out of your way to run into these problems.
Exactly.
So, don't worry too much.
Somebody knows that one guy who's like, I told you that's how it worked, and now it does.
Well, he's earned his hat.
He has.
He got it out of the kitchen.
And then all of this other stuff is just cleaning up some things. They're all non-functional changes, so if you really want to know, links in the show notes, go read it.
Yeah.
And that's our Oracle changes. Then we go to the Magic Tournament rules update.
Da-da-da.
Yeah, so there are two things here that matter to not judges. One is if you are drafting Core Set 2019, do not take out the basic lands first, because the basic land slot is now a basic land slot or the common dual land slot. So,
or the one checklist card that you also have to leave in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
You actually have to draft the checklist card even though it doesn't do anything.
I didn't realize it took the place of a land. Yeah. That's odd.
And importantly, if you draft the checklist card, but not the card that goes with it, it doesn't mean that you get the card that goes with it just because you have the checklist card. Look, we got to be explicit about this so people understand.
That's They made a point of explaining that in the explanation given too.
But if you get Bolas, you don't have to have the checklist card. Or you don't have to actually draft the checklist card. You could just, you know, get one from the store.
Yeah, don't feel like you can't play it because you don't have it. Like, you can use something else.
Or play with opaque sleeves.
Opaque sleeves, that's right, yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So that's the most important thing. The other thing involves loops.
It sure does. Do you like to shortcut loops? If you like to shortcut loops, you'd better go read this thing about shortcutting loops. If you don't, move along.
Yeah, if you were playing a deck that involves some sort of infinite loop, then you should probably go read this.
You should think about your life choices.
Also that. But, like, because of Teferi and that god-awful win condition deck, you remember last week or the week before when we couldn't figure out what?
Apparently we were too pure to understand the savagery that was going on in that deck.
Yeah, that blue-white control. Was it blue-white? I think it was a blue-white control deck.
It was blue-white, yeah.
Was running no win conditions that we could see. That's because the win condition, according to the many people who let us know, and thank you for that, is getting Teferi out and then tucking himself back into your deck over and over and over, thus eventually decking your opponent.
You know, you said all of that, but what I heard was the win condition was being a horrible person.
That's what I said, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, the reason we couldn't see it is because we are not horrible people, it turns out. My mom will be very proud.
I think I also just assumed that even control decks usually have a way to win the game that isn't starvation.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, no, the win condition is starvation.
Yeah, so with that coming up, they decided to look at it again. Now, in the Magic Judges blog, Toby Elliott goes into a little more detail. The link to that, policy changes for M19. The link to that is also in the show notes. And again, if you would like to find out more, or if you're a judge, you should read this anyway, then yeah.
Yeah, I will also say that the whole thing about shortcutting loops has now been moved to the MTR rather than the comp rules. And it's actually written in a way that you can pretty much understand it if you just go read the MTR. The MTR is less, I want to say it's less legalese than the comp rules.
Yeah, it's English, not legalese.
Yeah, so yeah. Just go read it if you're into the whole loop thing. Otherwise, don't worry about this. Call a judge.
Exactly. Call a judge.
Hey, that's what it says.
Yeah. So there you go. That is the MTR updates for non-judges. Right. If you're a judge, there's more there. Go read it. For the rest of us, it really doesn't matter. If you want to hear about that, I'm sure you can go listen to JudgeCast, and they will tell you all about it, because that's what they do.
That is exactly what they do.
You know, every other week when Prilliman has phone privileges.
Yeah, I wonder how they feel about him being on the phone for hours.
So, you might think we're done. We are not done.
Nope.
Oh, no. Because today, was it today? It was today. Gavin Verhey put up another Checking In on Brawl article, which it turns out Brawl is actually not going the way of Frontier or Tiny Leaders, like so many people seem to want it to. And there's design support. They're actually keeping Brawl in mind for designing upcoming sets, not like focusing on it, but like making sure that if they're going to have multicolored legendaries, that they spread them out a little bit, that sort of thing. So that's good. There's some store support coming, maybe. We've locked in Brawl as a format going forward, and supporting it in stores is absolutely something we intend to do. They're not going to announce what that is just yet, but something's coming up in the future. So cool. They're going to keep an eye on Brawl for the first rotation, because remember, Brawl follows standard as far as rotation, so when return to what's it called? Guilds of Ravnica, not RTRTR, which I might start calling it that just to be funny. But no, when Guilds of Ravnica comes out and rotation happens, then Brawl will also
return to Guilds of Ravnica, City of Guilds.
Maze.
Crash.
And the other thing is that one-on-one Brawl is getting some rules changes again. The life total was 30. They knocked it down to 20. And then they realized, and now it's up to 25.
Do I hear 27.5?
That, I mean, I'd be all right with that. Everyone has to include one copy of Little Girl in their deck.
That sounds like the best brawl ever.
So yeah, life total is going to be 25 in 1v1 brawl. And in 1v1 brawl, you get one free mulligan.
Well, that's nice.
So yeah. There you go. That's what's new. So sweet.
Yay.
If you're a brawl aficionado, then you should know that and enjoy. So now, you might think we're done, but we're not. Also, the commander ban list announcement was made, and everything's fine. Nothing is ruined. No changes.
Hooray.
Nice.
They're actually excited that they get new Elder Dragons.
Well, as they should be, because...
Yeah.
Elder Dragons. The other bit of big news came last week after we recorded, of course.
Naturally.
The San Diego Comic-Con Planeswalkers, like they do every year, we get alternate art Planeswalkers available at Comic-Con. And this time it is super sick Therese Nielsen Planeswalkers. Wait, I don't actually know which cards these are. It's Gideon of the Trials. Jace Cunning Castaway, Liliana Untouched by Death, Chandra Torch of Defiance, and Nissa Vital Force. With super sweet Therese Nielsen art of Planeswalkers in front of some stained glass that is, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
My.
I like God. How each one of their stained glass things kind of ties to their story.
Yeah.
Which is a fun element.
That Chandra is amazing.
Well, not
probably also going to be the most valuable one in the long run.
Kind of ties to their story. Like, these are set in Dominaria, I think. Like, the stained glass. Because Gideon is standing in front of, I assume that's Sarah?
I would guess.
And then Jace is in front of Urza. Liliana's in front of Nicol Bolas. Chandra's in front of a blue-haired... Is that Jaya?
Gotta be. Look at the goggles.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't narrow it down
they
anymore.
They do nothing.
But they do look like Jaya Goggle.
And then Nissa is in front of, I forget who this character's name.
Fraelis?
Fraelis, right. There yes. We go. Thank you.
I think the really important thing is that we skip over to Jace's card and look at how he's just completely shunning Urza because he's going to go to his room, listen to music.
You're not my real dad.
It's like, I'm not part of your legacy, Dad.
God.
You hang out with Karn. Don't you call him part of his legacy either. He's got other stuff to do.
So
and Urza's
yeah.
just like, it's just like this with everybody else in my life.
The other neat thing about this is that Christine Sprankle was actually the model for most, if not all, of the female characters on these, the stained glass and the planeswalkers themselves.
Yeah, that kind of looks like her. That makes sense.
I don't... Therese Nielsen's been tweeting about these ever since they were revealed.
Yeah.
But I don't remember exactly how many of them were Christine. But still, that's really cool.
That is nice. I know the two of them got along.
Yeah, I think the word is famously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we heard about it.
Exactly. So there
yeah,
you go.
If
the link to the show notes goes to an IGN article, because for some reason that's what we got.
That's where I found it. Yeah, these things are going to be $100 if you're at the event or you're quick to get it online. I suspect that these ones will probably not linger like the last ones did by virtue of the power of Therese Nielsen and the fact that these aren't like $150 or however much the old ones were.
Yeah.
Like, this is probably them trying to find that sweet spot. Like, last year they overshot it. Like, it's kind of weird to watch them go year to year on these things, because originally it was just like, maybe people will buy these, maybe they won't. And then the second year, they're like, dude, let's put a Garrick Axe in it. Because, you know, no one cared about the Garrick Axe, they just wanted the cards.
Dude, nice, get there.
Yeah. And over time, they've just fluctuated the pricing and all that. Like, this is probably the actual sweet spot they're aiming for. So, that's nice. I'm not planning on fighting to get any of these, so good luck to all of you. I am, however, looking forward to more of the super sweet, like, full art images. Because we can sort of see them here, and I imagine they're probably pretty versions of these that we'll be able to make, like, phone wallpapers and stuff out of. So, that'll be neat.
That will be pretty neat.
They're, like, the right angle. Like, because they're profile shots and not landscape shots, these are probably a lot better for phone wallpapers than desktop.
Definitely.
Again, probably not great for playmats unless you get, like, a playmat of all five of them.
Yeah.
Which would actually be really sweet.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, you could probably tile them together pretty well, but either way.
I actually like the image right here on this page that shows off all five of them together, you know?
Yeah, I like it, too. I think my favorite part of it is that there are going to be purists out there who will not be able to stand it because they're not in Wooburg order. And that makes me happy.
Oh, my God. Some work in Photoshop or GIMP, you can fix that in...
Like just, you too can solve this problem, like, or you just can be angry on the internet.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So that is all the news. There is one little bit of thing here that Bill decided to put in the show notes. So, hey,
entirely
Bill.
What, for the title.
What is this?
So, on Mark Rosewater's blog, where he answers questions people send him, he got this question a few days ago. And the question is, I noticed there isn't as much cheesecake art and magic as there used to be. Can you bring some of that back and put in beefcake art for the ladies too? Gideon seems to be a good candidate for the latter. And Mark's response is, we've made a conscious effort to move away from art that would make a subset of players feel uncomfortable to play it. So, like, on the, like, the very serious level, like, this is their way of going, look, we're not going to do, you know, scantily clad men and women in these cards because it does make it a bit awkward. There are some challenges there, and they certainly don't want to have another Earthbind situation. Don't Google that at work. And more importantly, though, I like the fact that I didn't know what this was actually about until I read it properly, because the URL just gets truncated to, I noticed there isn't as much cheesecake art in. And I'm like, you're right. It's been a while since I've seen some quality cheesecake art in Magic the Gathering. But they're referring to cheesecake and beefcake as in, yes, fan service-y pictures of women and men. But
I didn't even know what cheesecake, that cheesecake, like, I know the term beefcake to mean, like, big, hunky, scantily. Like, there is recent beefcake. Look up, oh, crap.
Victor.
Enthralling Victor.
Yeah.
From Battle Bond. That is just like, if I showed that to my mom would go something to the effect of, I would not kick him out of my bed for eating crackers. Because my mom says stuff like that.
I believe the story.
Like, all the time, actually.
I completely believe this tale.
But I did not realize that cheesecake was the feminine equivalent of beefcake. I've never heard that. Never.
I've only heard it a few times ever. Like, it never really just stuck in my head as a term. But I have seen it once or twice on the internet, and so I've sort of put it together. But, like, when I saw this, I was just straight up like, yeah, Magic needs more cheesecake in it. Stuff's delicious.
Yeah, I just thought that was a term from long ago, that it was an older code, but it still checked out.
Could be.
I don't like cheesecake, the food, I must say. I'm sorry.
What?
I don't like cheesecake. I like essentially ice cream that you get from Cheesecake Factory. Like, I don't like real cheesecake. I like... We're just going to combine a bunch of chocolate and peanut butter into a pie, and we're going to call it a cake, and we're going to give it to you. That's what I like. Absolutely horrible for you. Don't eat it. It's delicious.
Yeah. But, so, that's one thing that I didn't know that was a thing. And the other is that we've made this joke before. I don't know if we've done it on this show. But Wizards, in recent years, has, like you said, made a conscious effort to move away from that sort of thing. And if they were to suddenly go back to it, then they would catch all kinds of hell.
Yeah.
Blizzard, on the other hand, never stopped. And no, I never hear anyone complain about it.
There was a lot of controversy in Overwatch when it very first came out, specifically over Tracer and her butt.
Yeah, I remember the one Tracer butt pose controversy, but like... She's not scantily clad. It was just the way she was standing, which don't get me started on how dumb that was. But like, Google Valyra the Rogue and just, whoa, like, Magic couldn't get away with that ever.
Magic has come a long way to being, like, a big, we're not doing that, which is funny because it's from the same company that makes D&D. And D&D, for a lot of purposes, is the modern equivalent of, hey, look, it's the heavily armored dude and the, you know, very lightly armored woman. And those are your two concept pictures for nearly every class. I think they've gotten better about that recently, too, but I haven't looked into fifth edition stuff. But I remember, like, the old, like, manuals and stuff, like, the women were differently outfitted than the men in most of the pictures. And they've just tried to get past all that because, yeah, it is a bit of a turnoff if you're sitting down to play a game and, like, half the cards in your hand look, like, inappropriate or at least ridiculous with the fan service. We made a joke of, and I make this joke frequently enough, that when you sit down and your opponent has the anime boob play mat, you sort of go, really? And you don't really want that to be also on the cards that you're opening in your pack and playing with. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Magic has turned 25 now.
It can rent a car.
Yeah, it can rent a car. It's getting past all that. Whereas the newer games with all the anime art is like, look at all these boobs! And the kids play with those games, and then those games die. So,
yeah.
Not saying that it's causality, but I think there is some relation going on there.
You can grab the attention of a certain demographic by pandering like that. That's part of the thing that comic books do. And that's a lot true, of comic books don't survive their audience growing out of their teenage years. Because that kind of stuff was awesome when you're 12, 14. And as you get older, you're like, eh. Or you use the rest of the internet and you don't need to get this from your hobby. Like, I prefer Magic to actually just be accessible to everyone. And also, I play Magic the Gathering in game stores when there's like 8-year-olds across from me. So I think it's worth acknowledging that younger people are playing this and maybe we need to set a better example than a lot of other things do.
There's also that. Also, there's no sense making any subset of players go and not want to be there.
Very little would be gained from that.
I mean, it would make all of the dude bros who don't want to change perfectly happy, but we don't care about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We're not saying that you can't have your anime boob playmat. We're just saying, don't bring it to the tournament. What's wrong with you? Come on.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, understandably, not everyone wants to have the anime boob playmat in their hand. So that's why not putting it on the cards. If you get your own peripheral stuff, that's on you, and you can consume all of the judgment and consequences you may or may not get in your environment for that. But Wizards is controlling the cards that you're going to look at when you're playing, so they want to hold it to a higher standard.
Yeah. Insert all the comments about SJW is ruining the game. Game will be dead
in 6 months. You still got Steve Argyle. You're fine.
game will be dead in 6 months. All right, here we are at the 25th anniversary. On the last episode of the Mana Pool, actually, we did it. I was very proud of this episode. We did the history of core sets. We went one by one through every core set ever and just talked about what was different about it, all the core set trends. Did you know that for a while they took Trample out of the core sets because Trample was too complicated?
And this is old Trample, right?
What? No, this was Trample.
Well, I mean, like, the way that Trample interacted with some keywords has changed over time due to the different way they assign damage. But
true,
this is before all of that, when it was actually just as simple as it is all the time.
Yeah. And actually, this was more recent than you might think. This was, like, 8th, 9th edition.
Huh.
Yeah. They just took Trample out because it was too complicated. But stuff like that. And all of the big rules updates and card frame updates and whatnot, for the most part, have come at core sets. And it's amazing how so many core sets had a massive change that was going to be game-destroying and game will be dead in 6 months.
Yeah.
And yet, like I said, here we are, 25th anniversary. So, you know, feels good, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, if that sounds interesting to you, then go listen to it. It was number 516.
Also not a small number.
True. But anyway.
Dude, you've been doing Mana Pool for more than a quarter of your life.
I know, isn't that great?
Weird. Good job.
And so then we go to a tiny bit of Magic Online news.
Yeah, just the smallest bit. Magic Online is updating the treasure chest that you get when you win stuff to include cards from the new set. This happens all the time whenever new cards are introduced to the environment. Just thought I'd let you know. If you'd like to see, there's a link in the show notes. Past that, the new set went online last week. So if you're looking to play Core Set 2019 online, you can. So have fun.
Yeah, it's out already, right? Or it will be?
It came out before the pre-release.
Right. Okay, that's what I thought.
It's so different from back when it would take 4 to 6 weeks. So by the time it got its online pre-release, you'd been playing with the cards in your hand for more than a month. They've done an amazing job to improve the quality of the Magic Online transition over the last few years. And I really don't think they get enough credit for how much they've changed it in a very short amount of time. So,
yeah.
Kudos to the Magic Online team.
Yeah, it's a shame, you know, it's still ugly and outdated.
But that's you have not a different magic for that.
That's not what we're talking about here.
The people implementing it are not the people designing it. So
exactly. So congrats to the people implementing it. Damn fine work. So, I think now we're done, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay, nice then. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinNabob. There's no I in Goblin because it's unfortunately now bound under Ixalan's binding properly. So it'll be hanging out with Emrakul in the foreseeable future, or at least the long future. Past that, I would like to note that I caught Ant-Man and Wasp last Thursday and enjoyed it. It was a fun movie, like the first Ant-Man. So fun all around. I also caught the new Jurassic World movie because I was out and I'm like, hey, matinee showings of movies I didn't see. And I asked a friend, what do you want to go see? And they're like, well, I mean, I haven't seen Jurassic World yet. I'm like, cool, matinee dinosaurs. So I still haven't seen Solo. But I saw Matinee Dinosaurs, and it was okay.
Fair enough.
I mean, it wasn't by no means the most amazing movie ever, but it was fine. Like, I thought it was fun. The trailer did give away a lot of the movie, as you would have expected, but I still enjoyed the journey. I will say, though, that it's sad. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there are lots of moments in this movie that were blatantly, hey, you remember this thing that you loved in your childhood when you first watched Jurassic Park? Those two mean things to it. Like, the whole thing just felt depressing, and it also had a not at all subtle, like, business person stand-in who had, you know, really bad hair, and it was blonde, and you know exactly who they represent. So there you go.
Nice.
Subtlety is lost, but then again, you're watching a movie about dinosaurs, so hey.
I haven't seen it yet, but the parents enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So
I enjoyed the movie. There's just a bunch of randomly sad moments, which you're like, oh, okay. So I'm really glad that I also had Ant-Man to keep me happy. Because Ant-Man's hilarious.
Nice. All right, then.
Yeah. Hey, Clues, you're back.
Hey, I'm back. Yeah. Sorry, I've been gone. I was sick, then I was out of the country. But hey, I'm back.
I mean, we did get that audio clip of you last week, so you were sort of on last week's episode.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah, dude.
I haven't listened to that. I guess I should go do that. Did I say anything good?
I mean, you were kind of hard to understand.
Yeah, a little bit.
You had conviction.
Did I say that blue sucks?
I mean, we assumed.
Okay, good, because it's pretty much what I was thinking.
I mean, admittedly, you were underwater at the time, so I'm sure that's exactly what you were thinking.
That's right. I did some research, and I still hate blue and magic. Although I do enjoy scuba diving. So that was cool. But hey, I'm back. If you'd like to hear more from me, I do have another podcast that I do, believe it or not. It's found at Random Discard. It's the name of that podcast. You can find it on the MTG Cast Network, as well as on our own website. We actually have a couple of episodes recorded that are currently in the editing process. So look for those to happen now that I'm back in the country and can actually edit. Because I didn't take my laptop with me. I was on vacation.
I mean, you're underwater. Yeah, right. You shouldn't take it there.
Also that.
Well, I do have a computer that I take underwater. It's strapped to my wrist. It's my dive computer. It tells me how deep I am and how long I've been there and how much nitrogen I've built up in my bloodstream, and I'm going to die if I don't get out of the water soon. So that's kind of nice.
Does it say,
sound like a
dive, dive, dive?
No, it's usually the opposite of that.
Oh. Live.
Yeah. But, you know, look, when you're doing repetitive dives at different depths, you really want to go with dive computer, not tables. Tables suck for that. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
Wouldn't a table just sink or float anyway?
I breathed a bunch of really nice nitrox, which is awesome, which is oxygen enhanced air. So 32% O2 is great.
Ooh.
Although if you go too deep, you encounter oxygen toxicity and you die. So again, you want to have that dive computer so I can tell you if you're going too deep. That's a good thing. That's what I'm going to say. But yes, nitrox, it's like magic. It's amazing. Anyone who's a diver out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Otherwise, never mind. But random discard, that's a thing. Got some episodes coming soon. You'll see them or hear them. Yeah, you won't see them. We don't do the video thing. What can I say? If you want to reach me directly, your best bet is the Twitters. I'm at LockLuzé, spelled just like it is in the show notes. It is in the show notes, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't read the show notes.
Yeah, neither does anyone else, so it's fine.
Okay, good. Excellent. That explains.
Yeah, we've had like your routing number there for months and no one's even messed with it.
Fair enough. Take it away, Chue.
Who, me?
You.
Oh, well, you can find me all over the place as the Manapool. Be sure to put in the Manapool. The Manapool. Usually one word. For instance, Twitter, at the Manapool. Facebook.com/TheManapool. Instagram, Manapool. The. We have a subreddit. I still don't know what to do with that, so by all means, throw some ideas at me. I say this every week, no one has yet, so. Clearly, other people also don't Reddit.
Have you considered spreading misinformation?
No. We have enough with the rest of the internet for that.
You have the rest of Reddit. Gotcha.
YouTube.com/TheManapool, where here lately it's been... Oh, I don't know. I've actually had a lot of stuff going up lately. So since the last time we recorded, what else has gone up? I've had some Hearthstone... Some Plague Inc. I played Plague Inc. on stream, and that was pretty funny. It's a great game if you've never played it. Plague Inc. Evolved, the Steam version, where you are creating a plague to wipe out the world. So two of those videos are up. I played another chapter of the most depressing game ever, The Walking Dead by Telltale Games. And so those videos, there will be four videos of that, they're going up on YouTube as well. Horribly depressing. So well done and well written. Horribly depressing. Just damn. Bill put it the best way I've ever heard. The Walking Dead is about horrible things happening to good people and leaving behind only horrible people. I was like, that is, wow, that's brilliant.
That's been my experience with the television show. That's been my experience watching bits of you playing. Like, I want to play the game so I'm not watching you do it, but I've never really been in the mood to be sad. So I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, that's why it takes me so long to do each chapter, because I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I have to stream something. Oh, I could stream Walking Dead. Or I could not want to die. You know?
It's not a happy story.
It's really not. But also on twitch.tv/TheManapool, that's where I do my live streaming. I've live streamed The Walking Dead, obviously, Plague Inc. I did a mass murder stream where I did... Party Hard and Plague Inc. I tried real hard to turn Party Hard into YouTube videos. It's just not YouTube friendly. And it would require either hours and hours and hours of editing, or I just didn't put it up. Or like uncut. But uncut is awful because there's lots of me just wandering around and looking at things and waiting. So that'd be terrible. But anytime I make a cut, because of the way the game is laid out, you lose track of the main character. Because everything's so small on screen. So anytime I would cut... My character would teleport somewhere, and you'd have no idea of knowing where he is unless I did some sort of zoom in or something, and it just wasn't going to be worth it, because the game's a lot of fun, but it's not, like, great for YouTube content, so it's never mind. No Party Hard. But Plague Inc. was a lot of fun. Also, I've been playing the Batman Arkham series. I finished Arkham Asylum. I love that game. It's brilliant. And now I'm playing Arkham City. And I desperately love that game. It's amazing. The first time I streamed it, I accidentally streamed for 6 hours.
Nice.
Yeah. It's like declaring war on your attention span.
It was like 2 a.m. and I went, holy crap, you guys, I gotta kill the stream. It's like 2 a.m. And then the next time I streamed, I think I did like 4 hours and I stopped at 1 a.m. I'm like, holy crap, you guys, it's 1 o'clock. If I don't stop right now, we're doing another 2 hours. So we're stopping. But it's so great. I love it so much. It's got all of the same easy distractions as in an open, a normal open world game. But because it's not an open world, it's a city. It's a part of a city. All of those distractions are stacked on top of each other, and they're very, well, not stacked on top of each other, but they're very dense. So it's hard to go from point A to point B without seeing something else to go see what that is.
It doesn't help that the game actively interrupts what you're doing by having missions just trigger because you're nearby.
Yeah. But it's not like that's a bad thing. I love it.
Just no, like, it's great. It's just, I remember it took you more than an hour to cross the city to get the grapnel boost because stuff kept happening on your way over. It's like Batman's life is one annoying problem that he has to solve after another. And if that's not capturing the Batman experience, I don't know what is.
Oh yeah, I had to go do the augmented reality flight training missions. But on the way, a phone started ringing and you have to go answer that or someone dies. And then, oh, there's an assault. Okay. Oh, look, there's a Riddler informant. Let me go beat on him for a while and unlock some stuff on the map. Oh, what's that over there? I don't even know what that is. Oh, let me get this Riddler trophy real quick. All of it is fun. And so, and the combat and everything has been improved from Asylum. As good as it was in Asylum, it's better in City. So in case you can't tell, I love this game. I 100%ed this game on Xbox 360 years ago, except for the Robin DLC, which I only played through, I think, twice, maybe just once, and never went back to get all of the hidden stuff. But other than that, I 100%ed this game. All the combat challenges, all the Predator challenges, with all four characters, like, I love this game. So now I'm streaming it, which means time gets away from me. So if you want to come watch me be Batman, then come hang out on the stream sometime. I also stream other things like Overwatch and Hearthstone and Killing Floor. And this other game called Minion Masters is what I was streaming before Batman, which was a lot of fun, but not like long attention span fun. So I played it for about 2 hours and I went, right, let's be Batman. But I stream a lot of different things. So by all means, if you like the whole streaming thing, then come hang out. And almost certainly I will play something that you'll enjoy because I play a lot of different stuff. Shut up, chair. And remember, if you have Amazon Prime, and I know a lot of you do, in fact, I think everybody on this call does, then that means you get one free subscription token to give to a Twitch streamer every month. So by all means, go use it. If you have a Twitch account, you can link the two. It only takes a minute. And, go give your free subscription token to a small streamer, preferably. I know, for me personally, it means a lot to get a new subscription because each of those is like, wow! As opposed to the example I always use, if you go to a streamer that has 2,000 subs and you're 2,001, then they're like, hey, thanks. But if you go to someone that has 20 subs and you're 21, that's insane! So, by all means, if you don't give it to me, please go give it to someone, otherwise it just goes to waste. And it's part of what you're paying for, and you can really make a smaller streamer's day with just a click of a button. So, go do that. You have to re-up every month, but still, it helps. And with that, I will shut up now. So, if you want to help support what I do with the 2 podcasts a week, and all the YouTube videos and all the streaming, the most direct way to do it is on Patreon at patreon.com/themanapool, where you can, if you so choose, get Manapool episodes and YouTube videos early. You can get the early stuff and the odds and ends, which is all the stuff recorded before and after both podcasts, which is uncensored and unfiltered. And for instance, on this episode, you'll get to hear why Clues might have a federal agent coming to visit him tomorrow.
Right.
And, you know, you'll get to hear him swear.
Right.
And if you are feeling exceptionally generous, you can become a Manapool lifeguard, which gets you the early stuff, the odds and ends, and the shout out on both podcasts, and gets your name on the Insulate for all the YouTube videos that go up each month that you support at that tier. So to that end, I would like to thank the following lifeguards: Kim Ho, Andrew Hunt, Al, Paul David, Lance Delicious, Team U, Hellas Haryu, John Morris, Stuart Slaw, PJ McMullen, Bosco Bertain, Casey, Nathan Hay, Danny Liao, Jason Doan, AJ Javieris, Cody Buckewing, Jake Jansons, Jason Kaus, Brian DeLucci, Stark Maximum. I was going to sneeze. Apparently I'm allergic to Stark. I'm sorry, Stark. Okay, never mind. John Parker, Dan Holm, Bartle, Mike Miller-Burned, and the Beast Father, Aaron Goodwine. It's sitting on the edge of my nose.
It's right there.
It's right there. I'm so sorry, listeners. But, okay, I seem to have gotten over it. So, thank you to all of those exceptionally...
Macho Grande.
Whatever he said. Thank you to all of those exceptionally generous people. And, yeah. Oh, God, I've sneezed. So, the other way that helps out immensely is just tell people. Either any of the podcasts or video you watched or stream or whatever, tell people. Hey, I like this guy, you might too. Or post it on Reddit or something, because I don't know how Reddit works. But whatever, anything you can do to help spread the word is brilliant and helps a lot. And doesn't require any money, which is another help. So now, with that, I'm going to be done before I do sneeze and, like, blow the microphone out. So, this has been Monday Night Magic number 614. Thank you all so very much for listening. And... damn it. And go play some magic.